Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. And if you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We're back with another great show today. High-profile coaches getting fired, quarterbacks who are overrated, NFL Week 10, College Football Week 11. We've got some big takeaways. We've got some takes for you guys, betting locks of the week, and a lot more. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad. Another week in the books. As a Raiders fan, I'm excited, looking forward to next week. But some takes that we have to talk about, and you're absolutely right about a quarterback that we need to have a real conversation about.
Yeah, Alex, we definitely do. And there's a couple of quarterbacks that we're going to talk about before this episode's over. We're going to take a look at some of these guys here. And we had some really interesting games. We had some big games in college football. We had some big games in the NFL. Another huge week of football like it always is, Alex. And we're starting to kind of get a picture here. We're starting to kind of see who the contenders are, who the pretenders are. This week in the NFL, though, was crazy because we had the Browns, Seahawks, Texans, Lions, Cardinals, and Broncos all win on last-second field goals. I believe I saw that was a record for the most game-winning field goals in a week in the NFL. A lot of great games. The Monday Night Football was one of those games that came down to the wire here. Denver pulls off a big upset here in Buffalo. It really happened for two reasons, Alex. The Broncos defense pushed around the Bills. They turned over Josh Allen multiple times in this game. Russell Wilson played maybe his best game of the year. I actually thought he had a nice job taking care of the ball, making some plays for that Broncos offense. And the Broncos, I mean, look, let's face it. They were the laughing stock of the league after giving up that 70-point game to the Dolphins. But here they are, playing better football. They've won three straight. I don't think they're a great team. I'm not trying to say that, but by any means, but they look a lot closer to what most people expected coming into the year. The Bills, on the other hand, look a lot like the team you expected coming into the year, Alex. Josh Allen was responsible for three of Buffalo's four turnovers, and every time that Bills offense seemed to gain some momentum, it would shoot itself in the foot with the turnover. The Bills defense in the fourth quarter gave up two scoring drives of more than 50 yards, including that drive that won the game. At 5-5, they are in serious danger of missing the playoffs, Alex.
Starting on the Bills side of this, I don't know. We know that Ken Dorsey was also fired, and I heard it was an exciting fire if you read a lot of what's coming out of Buffalo in terms of his departure and how it happened. If you're the organization, if you're the fans, it's always a good thing to make changes a year early instead of a year later. And this seems to be one of those situations. Perhaps maybe they should have moved on from McDermott a year early, meaning last year coming into this season, because now, even though I had that prediction in terms of that, they still obviously have a chance. I believe they're sitting at 5-5, so they're not out of the situation, but they are trending down. So I don't know what you should I do know what you should do. I believe this is going to be Sean McDermott's last year unless they go to the Super Bowl. I do not see them retaining his services. They've already gotten the first dominoes fallen in Ken Dorsey. The only next domino that can fall after that, because the DC, quote unquote, left on his own. But now the only person left now is you, Sean McDermott. And I do not believe he's going to be the coach of this team next year. It's the same old adage. They're not running the ball enough, even though James Cook did have 100 yards rushing. I know he fumbled the ball, but he did have a strong 100 yards rushing the ball. However, like you said, Russell Wilson just really balled out. Denver just looked like they want this a lot more. But the Buffalo Bills just look like a discombobulated team in terms of what they want to do. I think I sent you a few stories about Stephon Diggs, not only Stephon Diggs, but also now Trayvon Diggs coming out and making statements. You know that doesn't bode well. And another one of my preseason thoughts was Stephon Diggs is the last year for Stephon Diggs. He's getting traded next year. And this is making me feel more confident every day as I watch this team. And now you're going to have a lot of people, pundits and things, talking about Josh Allen and as well as the Buffalo Bills, but probably more about the Buffalo Bills coaching than actually about Josh Allen, which I think really what the conversation should center around, because he has just regressed year after year. But not only is he regressing just in terms of saying he's regressing himself, he seems to be regressing and going from Josh Allen. You know those funny memes where there's the original face and then by the end of it gets to another face? He seems to be morphing into Jay Cutler. And this team defensively is taking a step back. I know they have injuries, but I don't know what is going on that team. I don't know if it's leadership outside of coaching. I don't know if it's the leadership in the locker room. I don't know if it's Josh Allen just perhaps getting stuck at a certain point and not being able to ascend to another level. But there definitely is an issue going on with the team. And perhaps it's just time to change the face in terms of who's leading that team is Sean McDermott.
Yeah, I think he feels that seat starting to heat up, and I think that's why they made the move to get rid of the OC. I think he is looking for a way to kind of push the blame to someone else. Look, was Ken Dorsey great? I don't know. I don't know if he was a great play caller, but I think the pressure is starting to really mount in Buffalo because this team had big expectations. A lot of people thought that this is a team that should be in that Super Bowl contention, and they don't look anything like a Super Bowl contender right now. But you're right. We need to focus on Josh Allen here. And I'm not trying to take anything away what you're saying about Sean McDermott. I think you're absolutely right. I think they've underachieved. I think this team peaked. We talked about it during the offseason. I said, I think this team peaked with 13 seconds to go in that Chiefs game. And we just haven't seen that team since then. And you're right. We haven't seen the same Josh Allen since Daboll left. And it got me thinking here. So I put out the Twitter poll question of the week. Once again, at PGF Podcast on Twitter. Love getting feedback from PGF Nation on these poll questions. After that Monday Night Football game, I started to think about this, and obviously I want to get your take here too, Alex. And I said, who is the better quarterback, Josh Allen or Justin Herbert? I was a little surprised, actually, by the results. Right now, Justin Herbert was leading at 63% of the votes, Josh Allen only getting 38% of the votes. Maybe some of that is recency bias, and I know that always factors in because we just saw Josh Allen have a bad game. He's not having a great year. But Alex, I'm going to start with you before we jump into this real quick. Do you agree with the PGF Nation? What do you think of this poll question and the results? Do you agree with them? What side are you on here?
Yeah, I'm on the side of Justin Herbert here. I just seen with his inept coaching, which we've pointed out several times on this podcast, and with Brandon Staley, is how he's sabotaging the team, but yet it seems Justin Herbert is still thriving versus what we see with Josh Allen, which seems to have a little bit more of a stable coach and a little bit more of a stable franchise, not being able to ascend. One is overcoming, one is regressing. So it's Justin Herbert without even a question.
Yeah, and I'm completely with you, Alex. And I think for a long time, Josh Allen was just viewed as this elite quarterback. The reason I chose these two guys is because I've always felt like Josh Allen was a little overrated, and I always felt like Herbert was a little underrated. And Allen, like I said, he's always been considered the better of the two. He's always been looked at as this top five quarterback, yet I hear all the time how Herbert is overrated. I decided to jump into the numbers here. Not opinions, but the numbers. And for their careers, Justin Herbert has a much higher completion percentage, throws more touchdowns per game, less interceptions per game, has a higher quarterback rating, and throws on average 283 yards per game. Allen averages only 242 yards per game. Herbert's better across the board. If you just want to look at the numbers, and I know numbers aren't everything, but I had to put something tangible here to look at, because when I look at Herbert, and you hit on this perfectly, he's stuck with a terrible coach. And it's a guy who also calls the defense for this Charger team, and they're consistently one of the worst defensive teams in the NFL, despite the amount of money that they've invested in that side of the ball. I just think it's time people stop looking so much at the wins and losses and pointing to Herbert, and start looking at the actual quarterback himself, because I think you're right. I think Josh Allen is in a pretty good situation, a lot better situation than Herbert, and he's playing at, quite frankly, not anywhere close to a top five level right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Before we move on, I really want to go back to something you mentioned about Russell Wilson and what he did during this game. I mean, 24 of 29, 193 yards, two touchdowns, one heck of a pass, and an even better catch and toe tap by Sutton in the end zone, by Courtland Sutton in the end zone, which was a game changer and changed momentum in this game. Also, getting back to the run with Javonte Williams, tough running. Only 21 carries for only 79 yards, but they were punishing runs. And then another key thing was Russell Wilson getting back to using his legs as well. He looked like old Russ out there, winning the game with his legs and with his arm and with his smarts. And that is the person that we thought Russell Wilson was going to be. I'll be remiss if we didn't mention what Denver did to actually win this game as well.
Yeah, after the train wreck start that this Denver team had, the defense was terrible. The offense looked terrible. This team looked like it was going nowhere. We were talking about them maybe being in play for a top two pick. Here they are starting to play a lot better football. I think Sean Payton is starting to figure out how to utilize the players on this team a little better. It took them a few weeks to kind of put things together. Like I said, I'm not sure they're a great team, but I really like the improvement I've seen from him in this offense. I like what I've seen from Russell Wilson. You're absolutely right. I don't know if he's the guy we saw in his prime. I still don't think he's that level, but we're starting to see Russell Wilson at maybe 70, 80% of what he used to be. And I think the Broncos are thrilled to at least see that, because we were not seeing that last year, and we certainly didn't see that at the start of this year. We're starting to see the guy that we thought would be closer to what we expected with Russell Wilson. So you're absolutely right. Colts beat the Patriots with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. Mac Jones was benched in this game. Alex, I'm not sure he starts another game this year. I think they've seen enough from him. No need to spend a lot of time on this game. I just wanted to point it out because I know you don't agree with me on this, Alex. We talked about it briefly last week, but I'm doubling down on my take here. I still think this is the final season for Belichick in New England. Now, does he coach somewhere else? I don't know. But I think this is it for him and the Patriots. I think they know it. I think he knows it. They have got to start over. This thing is a total mess.
Yeah, you know what? I'm still on the other side of that. I think they still retain him, but I'm going to say again, and I'm not sure if I made this sentiment last week or if we were talking offline when I said this is now the pivotal moment for Bill Belichick to now pivot off of his stern way of doing things, and now he needs to change his coaching style because you no longer have, and I likened Belichick to Greg Popovich in terms of their coaching style when they had a big-time superstar, all-time all-world player. When you have a Tim Duncan, when you have a Tom Brady, you can yell at that player to get everybody else to fall in line. You don't have that guy there to be that rigid coach that you are to still coach the same way that you're currently trying to do with this iteration of players. Your players now are young. You're trying to coach younger players. You're not coaching an old guard, or you don't have the old guard of players that Teddy Bruschi or anybody in your locker room that comes from the ilk of the quote-unquote Patriots heyday. Everyone is gone. I mean, maybe there's one or two people. Who knows? But I believe outside of coaches, everyone is gone. This is a Bill Belichick thing. You need to pivot off of your style of coaching, because I 1,000% do believe he can still coach in this league. You need to pivot off your style of coaching, and you need to give up the power in the GM pool, because you have yet throughout the 20, 25 years, however long you've been coaching the Patriots, it's only been Gronk, no one else. That is now a you problem. We can solely look at you because you make those decisions. So this is on Bill Belichick, and if he does get fired, he gets fired for everything that I just said. And then we cannot dispute that, because everything I said is actually a fact and it's true. But he needs to pivot off of his style of coaching, because it no longer works with your current players or with the way coaching works in 2023.
You're absolutely right. Before we move on real quick, you're absolutely right, Alex. But here's my question, though. A 71-year-old coach who's had as much success, or quite frankly, more success than anybody in NFL history, is he really going to be able to pivot and change? Can you teach an old dog new tricks? Is he going to be able to look in the mirror and say, look, I need to change. I need to start doing things differently. Is he going to allow the Patriots to say, look, we need to bring in a GM, a personnel guy? Is he going to allow any of those things? Because I have serious doubts that he will.
I'm not sure if he will or won't. I think that now becomes the conversation between Kraft and Belichick, and then you let Belichick make the decision. This is what I want to do with my organization that I own. This is the way I want you here, but this is the new way things are going to run. If you're willing to, for lack of a better term, fall in line, we're happy to still have you here. If not, we're ready to move on and go in a different direction because this is not working for us.
Alex, CJ Stroud had another huge game. 356 passing yards, 2 total touchdowns. This kid is so impressive. He's so accurate. He's a pocket passer, but he can make plays when he needs to with his legs. I just love this guy's game. He had a bad pick, you know, a rookie pick, if you will, but he bounced right back, marched down the field with no time left. This was a big time game for him in this young team. I mean, this is a big spot going up against a really good team, one of the really good teams in the AFC. They passed the test in this one. Last week, we did our midseason awards. We both might have overlooked D'Amico Ryans. What a job this guy's done. What a job that they've done. When you get the quarterback, you get the head coach right, it's amazing how fast you can turn things around in this league, and it looks like they nailed both those moves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about CJ Stroud when we gave the midseason awards, like you said, in terms of recognizing if he can turn this team around, we have to start considering him for MVP. But I mean, just like when it looked everything was down and they were out, here comes CJ Stroud. And once again, another Noah Brown play, breaking tackles on the mark throw, allowing him to break tackles, and Noah Brown with the fortitude to still push forward. You know, and there's another thing to talk about Noah Brown for a moment, just to give this guy some kudos, because we saw him last week and we're going to see him. We saw him again this week. Last year in Dallas, he played 16 games, had 43 receptions, 555 yards, and 3 touchdowns. In 5 games, remember, he's not a starter. He has 21 catches and 439 yards and a touchdown. It looks like he's going to surpass what he's done and have the best career since he's been in the league since 2017. Like, this guy is somebody that was cast off from Dallas, and now he's in Houston looking like a real true guy. Along with D'Amico Ryans, we also have to mention Bob Slowick as well, the offensive coordinator who is curating this offense. And oh, by the way, they also ran Devin Singletary, who was one of the little scat backs that I talked about for Buffalo, who ran the ball 30 times for 150 yards, 5 yards a clip, and a touch. We also have to talk about what he's doing with the offense as a whole. So CJ Stroud, another great day. He did throw a pick. Oh, wow. Look, Mom, he has 2 interceptions all year long. But and then if we want to look at the other side of that, I mean, this was a shootout, obviously. But Joe Burrow, 27 of 40, 347, 2 TDs, 2 interceptions. They should have won this game. The score, the stats, we can talk about that. But if you watch the game, Tyler Boyd straight dropped a touchdown pass, and this game should have been over. Joe Burrow looks like he's back. I'm still not giving up on Cincinnati. They're now 5-4. They're looking good. They're trending. I mean, if we just have to take a quick look and we take a quick look at Houston, Houston really shapes up to be in a great position to make a run at a true playoff spot, because their next games are Arizona, Jacksonville, Denver, Jets, Tennessee, Cleveland, Tennessee, Indianapolis. They can win 6 of those games and actually perhaps make the playoffs as a wild card, or perhaps overtake Jacksonville and take the lead in that and maybe kick Jacksonville out of the playoffs. So this looks really, bodes really well for where the Houston Texans are set up, because that schedule is nice and, I don't want to say weak, but nice and soft. And the way that they're playing, they're looking like becoming, I don't want to say a powerhouse, but they're trending up.
Yeah, and I don't want to take anything away from the Texans because they played a great game. But I have to think, did the Bengals maybe get caught looking ahead to their game this Thursday night against the Ravens? That's a big spot. This might have been your classic sandwich spot. They came in, they looked a little bit lackadaisical in this game. Their defense, I mean, they got embarrassed by CJ Stroud. And like I said, don't want to take anything away from what the Texans did here. But that Texans offense, man, I mean, they torched them. That Bengals team gave up 544 yards, which is the most Cincinnati has given up since 2019. I got to push back a little bit on Burrow because, look, he's been really good since he's been healthy, but I didn't think he looked that great in this game. I think for the first time in weeks, he didn't look as sharp. He threw 2 picks in the fourth that were killers. I think they'll bounce back. I'm with you. I think they're fine. I think they got themselves that slow start. They started out a little bit in a hole, and this AFC North is crazy right now. It is so good. that it's actually going to be kind of tough for them to win this division. I'm not saying they can't do it, but that slow start is hurting them because the rest of this division is just playing so lights out right now. Alex, the Chargers gave up 533 yards and 8.5 yards a play to Jared Goff and the Lions. They absolutely didn't stop anybody. And look, Derwin James at this point, I think he's just a name. Between the injuries and the inconsistent play, he's become an overrated player in the NFL. I just don't see him making enough plays. Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, those guys were invisible in this game. Granted, I know the Detroit offensive line is maybe the best in the NFL, but at some point, this defense has to make stops. I mean, Justin Herbert and this offense were awesome. Once again, put up 38 points. This team still finds a way to lose because of Brandon Staley. It's the same story every week. Look, that seat right now has got to be scorching, scorching hot. The Chargers have no choice at this point because they are wasting this young franchise quarterback.
Absolutely, and we alluded to it earlier a moment ago, but Brandon Staley he has to be gone at the end of the year. I don't know. Perhaps the guy that was across the field calling plays will be the next coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. But this completely, I don't understand. You have all of these, you know, at least players in name on your defense, and no one can seem to make a play. Jared Goff wasn't sacked. Now, granted, we talked about this offensive line being a top three offensive line, no matter where you would have put them, 1, 2, or 3, but they're definitely a top. You didn't have any sacks. He barely was pressured. I mean, 23 for 33, 333, 2 touchdowns. You had Monk. They ran 31 times for 200 yards, 6.5 yards a clip, 3 touchdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs, 2 touchdowns. David Montgomery, as a fantasy owner, I like to always throw a few fantasy things in there. I was worried, but I still started Jahmyr Gibbs. He still got his fair share of carries and was able to score twice. And then you also had David Montgomery that came in with 116 yards. And I mean, who's covering Amon-Ra St. Brown? He is the only person there. There is literally 111 yards between him and the next person. The only other person to have yards is Khalif Raymond with 46 yards. Amon St. Brown had 8 catches for 156. Why couldn't you stop this man? He was literally the only guy on the field, and you are supposed to have, you know, a good front 7, and, you know, like you said, we talked about Derwin James. You also have Asante Samuel in that backfield as well. Somebody needs to be making a play defensively on this team. I'm not sure if everything is scheme, that why they look the way that they look, but this team needs an overhaul, and I think I would simply start with the coaching staff, not necessarily with the players. This seems to be something that has to happen with the coaching staff, because you got a great game from possibly a future Hall of Famer, Keenan Allen, with 11 catches for 175 and 2 touchdowns. I mean, he was on fire, and that's with the rookie Quentin Johnson, and also without Mike Williams. Austin Eckler still was, you know, out there doing what he does. In the receiving and the rushing aspect as well. So this seems to really right now fall all on Brandon Staley, and specifically him, because he's the defensive head coach. And at minimum, you should be taking care of your side of the ball. And right now, he's not. And at 4-5, and just a plug for my Raiders, now at 5-5, you're trending down, and the Raiders seem to be trending up.
Yeah, and as far as Detroit, they are definitely trending up. This team is going to be in the mix for the NFC Championship. They are tough, and they're going to be a tough out in the NFC. Jared Goff, behind that offensive line, they can run the ball. They have enough playmakers, especially now with Jameson Williams in the mix. St. Brown, like you mentioned, really good player. And Sam Laporta at tight end. Dan Campbell, I've got to give this guy credit. He has created an identity for this team. And that's something that a lot of coaches try to create. They try to create that identity and a culture, but a lot of them struggle to actually execute it. He's done it here. This team knows who they are. He's done a really good job of getting this team to buy in to what he wants them to be, and they're just playing really solid football. This is a team that I think is going to be in the mix. Like I said, I think they're going to be right in the mix for the NFC Championship game, and with the schedule ahead, pretty favorable too. They're going to win a lot of games down the stretch. Most impressive win of the week. I don't think there's any doubt about it, Alex. The 49ers absolutely destroyed the Jaguars. This team got back to looking like the team they were to start the year. Trent Williams, Deebo Samuel, they returned. This team got dialed back in after the bye. I think they really needed it after that three-game slide that they were on. They come out, look really sharp, both sides of the ball. The 49ers had almost twice as many yards as Jacksonville, four takeaways. Now, I still think Jacksonville is a pretty good football team. When the Niners are healthy, I think they have as high of a ceiling as anyone in the NFL. Four different 49ers scored in this game. This was a big bounce back win on the road versus one of the hottest teams in the NFL. Brock Purdy was really sharp, 149 passer rating. He still has the NFC's best QBR, but this was a nice bounce back game for him as well. It just comes down to the lines of scrimmage. I mean, that's really when this team is playing at a high level. They dominated both lines of scrimmage. Nick Bosa finally looked like Nick Bosa again. Chase Young had a sack. Trevor Lawrence was terrible in this game. Three turnovers, zero touchdowns. They were never in this game for a second.
Yeah, and this was something that I expected from the 49ers. You give Kyle Shanahan a bye week, coming off a three-game skid, to kind of right the ship, give everybody a chance. I know Christian McCaffrey was banged up a little bit. You also talked about Trent Williams. To them to get back to form, give them some time off. You get Deebo back as well. Everybody seems to be at full strength, and you get the full onslaught of what the 49ers are, whether even though this was an away game for them. They just purely dominate this game on every single level. The Jaguars had no chance to do anything at any point in time. I'm not surprised about this game. I am surprised about 34-3. And that leads me to the other side of the ball, the other side of this game, which is the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you plan on being any type of contender that is trending up, not saying that this is your year, but a team that we looked at that should be taking the next step, that has all of these weapons in Travis Etienne, Tank Bigsby, Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley, and Evan Ingram. This also pointed out something big that we talked about early on in the season, that Jacksonville offensive line is very weak, and they need to put a lot of effort into that. And they also need to put some effort into the defensive side of the ball, because you spoke about Trayvon Walker, first-round picks, pass rushes, and Trayvon Walker as well as Josh Allen. Both of these guys, outside of Josh Allen having one pop year, which was, if I'm not mistaken, was his rookie year, they're not getting the full pressure on the quarterback. They need to do a lot of work on the defensive side of the ball as well as the offensive line. I think their weapons and skill set position on offense are great, but they're going to need to put some real stock into this offensive line, and they're going to have to fortify, because I think with Alu Khan and Devin Lloyd, I think they're good at linebacker. I'm not sure too much about Andrew Sisko, but I think they need to put some work and effort into the secondary. I know you told Tyson Campbell is one of your guys to watch coming out this year, but they also going to need to put some effort into the pass rushers, specifically pass rushers and defensive tackles, because they need some work in order to be able to be a consistent contender, because they have these up and down, then they have these bad games where they just look like they're a team that don't belong on the field, and they should not have been beaten like a drum like they were on this game.
I think it's time that we start pointing the finger at Trevor Lawrence, because Trevor Lawrence at this point in his career is overrated. People, I just don't think they've noticed how mediocre he's been, because this Jaguars team is 6-3. They're winning games, and people just haven't even pointed out the fact that this guy just is not playing that good a ball. He has more turnovers this season than he does touchdowns. He's 14th in the NFL in passing yards. He's 21st in the NFL in passing touchdowns. Mac Jones has more passing touchdowns than Trevor Lawrence. Justin Fields has played in three less games and also has more touchdowns than Trevor Lawrence. And I don't want to hear anything about how he doesn't have anybody to throw to, because you pointed it out. Christian Kirk, one of the best slot receivers in the NFL. Evan Ingram, very good tight end. Travis Etienne is third in the NFL in rushing yards and is also an elite receiving back out of the backfield. And, of course, Calvin Ridley, an elite talent. They've struggled to get him the ball. It goes back to even last year, and I think this team was getting way too much hype, and now, like I said, because they have a nice record, we're just not noticing the fact that Trevor Lawrence is not living up to the hype and to the standard that we thought he was going to have as the number one pick. Go back to the playoffs. So they win that game, and everyone thinks how great this young player is, how great this team is. People forget he threw 4 interceptions in that game. But we just forget about that because the Chargers defense collapsed in the second half and blew that huge lead. At this point, he's a glorified game manager, Alex, and at best, that's what he is. He's got a good coach, and he's got some players around him, and that's the only reason this team's winning right now.
Yeah, you do have a point on Trevor Lawrence. If I had said my take, what I had about Kenny Pickett in terms of what C.J. Stroud had been doing in 8 games versus what he had done in 21 games, it's the same thing for the same energy for Trevor Lawrence as well. He has taken a step back. In a year we thought he would be taking a step forward when you add somebody towards what the ilk is that we thought Calvin Ridley was. So they need to revamp. They need to figure some things out. I think they need to get back to running the ball a little bit more is where I think they're lacking. Obviously, you can't run a ball in a 34-3 blowout, but still. However, they came off a bye week. You can't come off of a bye week after beating the Pittsburgh Steelers, being 6-2, and then deliver this type of output against the San Francisco 49ers. I expected better from Doug Peterson. I expected better from Trevor Lawrence, and I also expected better from the Jaguars as a whole. They need to have some serious internal discussions. But again, like I said about Houston really quick, their next few games, they have Texans. They also face Houston. Then they have Cincinnati, Cleveland, Baltimore, Tampa Bay, and Carolina and Tennessee. Couple of tough games in there, especially that stretch where they go against Houston, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Baltimore. They could stand to lose those 4 games in a row, which, to my other point, can propel Houston with the softer schedule into the forefront and leading that division. And then we would finally have, I believe, probably one of our worst to first that we always have every year in the NFL. That would be the team that would do it.
If Deshaun Watson can play like this, the Browns could be downright scary, scary good. This is what this team has been waiting for from Deshaun Watson. He was clutch in the second half. He went 14 of 14, 134 yards and a touchdown. The Browns running game, they picked up 178 yards rushing against a Baltimore defense that came in allowing just 91 per game. This game was wild. The Browns overcame 2 double-digit deficits on the road versus the Ravens. Baltimore had a 40-yard touchdown by Odell Beckham, a fumble on a punt return that set up a Gus Edwards touchdown run, which then gave the Ravens a 14-point lead less than 4 minutes into the fourth quarter. But give credit to the Browns. They made plays down the stretch in this game, and the Ravens didn't. That's the bottom line. The Browns' defense made some big plays. They had several huge stops in the second half, including that Greg Newsome pick 6 that made it a 1-point game. I think both these teams could be in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, as I spoke about Russell Wilson using his arm and his legs, Deshaun Watson uses like 8 carries for 37 yards. We know we lost, when I say we, I mean me and the Browns, since I had him in fantasy. We lost Nick Chubb early on this season, but you have Kareem Hunt in a backup role behind Jerome Ford, who nobody knew his name until Nick Chubb got hurt. But he's been able to come on strong, 17 carries, 170 yards, 6.3 a catch. That was 36 carries as a whole for 178 yards at basically 5 yards a clip and a touchdown against a very tough and solid Baltimore Ravens defense. Deshaun Watson still leaves a little bit to be desired in terms of what he's seeing on the field, but let's just say perhaps he's coming along a little bit more. He's been injured, I think, the last 2 games and a couple of games before that as well. So maybe he's starting to trend up, and this would be a great time to trend. Lamar, you know, there was a lot of things that I've always said about Lamar, and he's definitely been looking a lot better in terms of looking and scanning the whole field. And I've said before that it just feels like everything hasn't been put together. And what I mean by that is not that he hasn't had good games. I don't know if we've had that explosion game, meaning that 350-yard game, the 3-4 touchdown game, that pristine game in terms of that type of explosion that I thought a lot of us perhaps thought with this new OC and what he was going to be able to do. But nonetheless, they are still a formidable team in that division. However, that division is bound very, very tight. Everybody is within a game of each other. And Cincinnati and Baltimore, those two teams coming off losses, have a big game coming up this Thursday. I know that we'll talk about that later on, but they have a huge game this Thursday that'll probably be the most watched Thursday night game in a long, if not ever, if not in a long time. But that game, I think, is pivotal because each of these teams in this division, they start to face off on each other. And right now, all four teams are set up to go in. I believe by the end, by Thanksgiving, this will start to shake out and we'll see who are the top two that will be trending up in terms of going to the playoffs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Huge matchup. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think to your point about Lamar Jackson, I think it's fair. I will say, though, I don't think any quarterback is going to have that pristine game against this Browns defense. This Browns defense is for real.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're really, really good. So, you know, just to be fair to Lamar in that point, I think they're going to make a lot of quarterbacks look bad this year. But I hear what you're saying. I still don't think we've seen the ceiling for Lamar in this offense, which might be a good thing for this Baltimore team. You don't want to peak too early. I think there's still some room to grow there as well, even though he has had a really nice season. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pintglass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Washington really struggled in this game versus the Seahawks to rush the passer. And it's not a surprise. We know they got rid of their two best pass rushers. They had zero pass rush in this game. I mean, Geno Smith had all day to just sit back and pick apart this Commanders defense. He was only sacked one time. Sam Howell on the other side here, he's starting to look more and more like a possible franchise quarterback. I know you texted me during this game. I think you said, is Sam Howell a guy? Or something like that, to that effect. And I looked at that text and I'm watching the same thing going, he might be. He just might be. This kid is playing some pretty good football. He finished with 312 yards, threw two touchdown passes in the final 8 minutes to keep that game tight. Seattle gets the win. Geno was great in this game. But here's the other storyline that I kind of want to focus on here. In this game, yeah, he played great. They get the win. But at home, they struggled to put away a pretty mediocre team that were sellers at the trade deadline. Like I mentioned, getting rid of some of their best players. They got embarrassed last week. Yes, they're 6-3, and they'll probably make the playoffs at this point, but I'm not sold that this is a really good Seattle team.
Yeah, I'm still a believer. I did pick Seattle to win this division. I'm still standing on that, not wavering a little bit. I think in terms of what I've seen, great game by Geno. In terms of statistically and what it looks like. I'll get to Washington in a moment. But just to stay on Seattle, I think they need to get back to what Pete Carroll football is, which is running the football and then throwing off of the run. They need to really, truly establish this run, commit solely to the run, 15 carries for Walker, 10 to 12 carries for Zach Charbonnet. Get back to running this ball. Ensure that this ball is being run 25 to 30 times a game. Geno Smith threw the ball 47 times. I don't believe that that's what we want from Geno. I think Geno should be around the 25 to 30 mark at the most. 30 if you get into a shootout. But this should be a running team. And then you can use and be able to use DK, Tyler Lockett, who had a great catch, by the way, in the end zone. And now you also have Jaxon Smith-Njigba to really start to use the play action and open up those receivers. Now, on the Washington side, and perhaps that should be a precursor to maybe what next week's poll should be, perhaps, or somewhere down the line, is Sam Howell a guy, which is what I said, because in a draft where we're looking at maybe possibly about 7 to 8 projected top three or top four round quarterbacks coming out. This is something that you have to look at if you're Washington. You have to find out and know if Sam Howell is a guy or not and if how you want to move forward. Now, he's also a person I think is throwing the ball too much. He got sacked another three times. So he's once again still leading the league as the most sacked quarterback. But and I think we spoke about this before, that Eric Bieniemy needs to really take a step back. They are not running the ball enough. Defense is nowhere near where it should be. You need to help the defense out by slowing down, eating up clock, owning the time of possession, and then using Sam Howell, because I don't think he is a guy that you want throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game either. But I think the two teams, one, Seattle, looking good and looking like they're going to make the playoffs again. And I think Washington, as far as the future holds, it appears that you may have a guy in Sam Howell. And lastly, for my own personal fantasy purposes, Eric Bieniemy, this is to you. Can we please get Terry McLaurin the ball some more? Thank you, fantasy owners.
To your point about Sam Howell, he is currently the NFL passing leader. Pretty impressive stuff. I love the play calling I've seen from Eric Bieniemy, the creativity. I think he's done an amazing job as offense coordinator, just dialing it up and really leaning into Sam Howell's strengths and getting the most of this guy. I love what I've seen, but I'm with you. I would like to see a little more balance. I think some of that just kind of comes from your coaching tree DNA. And we see this a lot, right? Guys who come up and they kind of learn the ropes from other guys like Eric Bieniemy did with with KC and Andy Reid. Andy Reid has always been a guy that likes to air it out. He likes to, you know, he likes to throw the ball around, spread it around. He's never been a guy that really likes to lean on the run. I think some of that just kind of rubs off on young coaches that are coming up underneath guys like that. And I think that's kind of what this is. I think it's just in his DNA, but I do think he needs to kind of look at the playbook a little bit, kind of look at what they're doing and say, okay, let's take a little bit of pressure off this young quarterback, try to bring a little more balance to this offense. I agree with you completely. And you're right. I just posted it, Alex. So while you were talking, I just put it on Twitter. The next poll question is already out. If you guys want to jump on it, is Sam Howell a franchise quarterback? Always fun to get your guys' takes on there.
And hey, Brad, before we run, we have to just keep, I just want to keep mentioning Josh Dobbs. Also, the way that he found out that he was traded after being told he wasn't going to be traded and then waking up and finding out that he was getting traded. That's an interesting story. Josh Dobbs, again, 23 for 34, 268, one TD, another 8 carries for 44 yards and another TD. I mean, this guy is just simply all heart. And I just want to keep championing him in terms of what he's doing. He probably still does not know all of his teammates' name, all probably less than maybe 25 or less than of the playbook, and he's just simply continuing to win. So shout out to Josh Dobbs and the 6-4 Minnesota Vikings.
Bryce Young. Look, this game wasn't great. Two bad teams. Not a whole lot to talk about as far as the game, but I want to focus on Bryce Young here because, look, he didn't throw any interceptions like he did the previous week, but he could have easily had about 3 or 4 in this game because he was terrible. There's no way around it here. This kid is making awful throws. He's making bad decisions with the football. He had barely over 100 yards passing through 3 quarters and only 185 for the game, 0 touchdowns. Alex, he just doesn't look like a franchise quarterback. I'm shocked at how bad he actually is. At this point in the season, I kind of thought we'd see something, a spark, a few series, a game or two, just anything that you can look back at and say, okay, he's starting to put it together. I don't care about wins. I'm not worried about wins and losses. He's a rookie quarterback. But just show me something that says you look like the number one pick, because I haven't seen much. I really haven't. And look, he's not a bust yet. It's way too early. But man, the early results on this are ugly. I mean, he looks tiny. We knew he was small, but man, on an NFL field, he looks so small. He just doesn't have any zip on his throws. I didn't realize, like watching him at Alabama, I knew he didn't have a cannon, but it just doesn't look like he's got much arm at all. He looks scared in the pocket. It keeps looking worse. And we got to go back to it, but I think C.J. Stroud is making this look even worse because Bryce Young continues to look bad and C.J. Stroud is looking like a star.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what happens when you're drafted, especially when you're taking 1-2 in the draft. You get immediately compared to your immediate draft class, specifically in the first round. But Bryce Young looks like a person in terms of looking at his body mechanics and his body language. He is becoming disinterested in what is going on, and he's trying to push through like a lot of rookies do as well. But when you're the quarterback, it just seems like he's like, I don't know what's going on, and I don't know why I'm here and what I'm supposed to do. That's not an indictment to say that he can't play the position or turn this around in the next, let's say, 3 to 4 years before the end of his first contract. But he just doesn't look like he's confident in what is happening on the field, and you can see it. I was able to go back and watch some. This was not a game I was going to watch live, first and foremost. However, I did go back and I watched the condensed game and got a chance to look at Bryce Young. I mean, he just seems like he doesn't know, not that he's disinterested, but that he doesn't know what's going on. He's not confident in anything that he's doing. So I think this is a time for Frank Reich and that coaching brain trust to take some steps back. And I don't know if they've already done it or not, but this is something very common. Hey, what is it that you like to do? What are the plays that we're not calling that you need us to run to get you some easy wins? And that's how you start to build this player's confidence back up. Go to this man and ask him, What are some of those plays, perhaps from Alabama, that we need to run that'll get you comfortable, to get you some wins, and we slowly start to build this confidence up and end this season on a strong note?
We saw Kyler Murray come back for the first time this year and start for the Arizona Cardinals. So my question is, will Kyler Murray be the starter next season for Arizona?
Well, my answer is going to be yes, because if they're not getting that number one pick and they're not in a position to get Caleb Williams, he will be the number one starter. The number one starter for them next year. I think the real question is going to be, since it looks like they're going to end up with probably a top five pick, what do you do with that pick? This team is barren. There are none of the real true first rounds that were there. I think the only thing on defense that of note that is remaining right now, off the top of my head, I believe is just Buda Baker. I know they have the kid out of TCU, Zaven Collins. I think they have another kid out of LSU, BJ Olari, and things like that. So maybe they do have a few building blocks there. But for the most part, they don't really have a strong defense. They don't have a lot of things strong on offense. I mean, Marquise Brown, okay. I have him in fantasy too, but I'm not happy. So I'm just calling it based on fantasy. But they don't have a bunch of guys. I mean, they'll possibly be in position to go get a Marvin Harrison, but I think they'll be in position again already with two first-round draft picks from their trade last year. I think they should be in position to probably make another move unless there's somebody that's undeniable that's there. They need to get a lot of draft capital to really fill out this team and fill out a lot of different holes, offensive line. They need a big-time wide receiver. I mentioned Marvin Harrison Jr. There's a lot of things that this team needs.
It's an interesting situation because Arizona has a new GM and a new coaching staff that didn't draft Murray. They didn't see him play for them until Sunday. So this was really the first time that they got to see him play while they were there. Now they're 2-8. They could still be in the mix for a top quarterback in April. Maybe it's not Caleb, but we know this quarterback class is deep. If there's a guy that they really like there, maybe they pull the trigger on a Drake May or one of these other players. I don't know. I'm with you. I think it's starting to look more and more likely that Murray will be the starter next season. But let's put it this way. These last seven games, I think they're going to decide what direction they go, because this is basically an audition right here, right now, for Kyler Murray. He kind of has to prove himself all over again to this new regime. And new, like I said, new GM, new coaching staff. These seven games will be really interesting to watch how he plays, what this offense looks like with him under center. And I think it's going to go a long way what direction they go in that draft. Because I think you're right. They can move those pieces. They have a lot of holes to fill. But Kyler Murray is the focal point of all of it. Alex, let's wrap up NFL Week 10 with the game ball. We do it every week, Alex. Who's getting the game ball this week?
Once again, for me, it's C.J. Stroud. I don't need to spend a lot of time. I went in depth on him last week. But simply, if you watch the game, go watch the highlights. This kid is electric. This kid, the poise in critical moments and the plays that he makes is just simply continuing. And he's growing. The maturation is happening right in front of us. Again, I'm still waiting to watch, but CJ Stroud, once again, kudos to you. And Ohio State, please stop texting me.
Oh man, I love it. Alex, my game ball is going to go to Minnesota Vikings tight end TJ Hockenson. Look, the Saints had no answer for Hockenson. He was the best player on the field versus the Saints. 11 catches, 134 yards and a touchdown. He's really become one of the best young tight ends in the NFL, and this was a great trade by Minnesota when they acquired him from Detroit. I was surprised at the time that Detroit let him go. He's been a perfect fit in this Vikings offense, and with Kirk Cousins out, Justin Jefferson out, he stepped up big and helped them get a big win to stay alive for the playoff hunt. Alex, last week you had a WTF moment of the week. This week I've got one, Alex.
Oh, fuck.
My WTF moment goes to Commanders cornerback Benjamin St. Just. Not only did he allow a touchdown catch late, he gave up some key completions on the winning drive for the Seahawks. In the fourth quarter, he was flagged for pass interference on fourth down, had a face mask penalty on another. He was just terrible late in this game. Now, I want to say this. To his credit, he took the blame when he was asked about his performance by the media, saying, quote, "I need to get back up and work better because I cost my team a win." Now, look, I'm not going to say he cost them a win. It's a team game. No one player ever costs a team a win. No one player ever wins a game in the National Football League. But he was bad down the stretch and made some really costly mistakes. It definitely hurt their chances in this one. Alex, Jimbo Fisher officially out at Texas A&M. Texas A&M, man, you want to talk about a program that has some seriously deep, deep pockets. They had seen enough. Texas A&M is going to pay Jimbo Fisher more than $77 million to go away. Throw in the money that they're going to owe for bonuses that he's already earned, the payoffs for his assistants, and the contract for whoever becomes the new head coach, and the total cost is going to be north of $100 million. Look, Texas A&M, they have the money, the resources, the facilities. They're in a state that is really a recruiting hotbed. And, of course, they're in the SEC. So when you put those things together, they're going to be able to lure in a really top-level coach. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and I think they're going to swing big to try to get the right guy here because this is a program, even though they haven't had a ton of success, they are starving to be a winner. They are dedicated to trying to get this program at or near the top of college football. So here's the question, Alex. Who do they go after? Who's a guy that you're circling here that you think Texas A&M could target?
Urban Meyer. No question. Ooh. I mean, I know that it's a big get. It would be perhaps even more. It's Urban Meyer. You go get him. He's going to come in. He's going to immediately know what to do. He's also going to maintain the current, which I believe when I looked at it yesterday, they have a top 10 incoming class, but it will maintain your incoming class. And perhaps you can get some other players to decommit and come to you as well. And before we move further, there's an interesting thing that's happening, and it's happening in Texas. Quinn Ewers has said he is coming back. If you believe that Arch Manning is a guy and you need a quarterback in Texas A&M, you go get Urban Meyer, you go get Arch Manning, who's going to probably have to transfer and going to transfer and go and perhaps go, you can get him to come to Texas A&M. You can circle the wagons and do some incredible things with this team within less than a year if you get Urban Meyer. Now, that's just my narrative and that's just big thinking, but I'm telling you, there's a few things that you can do fairly quickly with this team and with the level of money and boosters that they have at their disposal.
Wow, I like it, man. And you're right. If there was ever a program that was going to swing for the fence and go after a name like that, it would be Texas A&M. And I don't think it's past the realm of possibilities here because I think you're right. They might actually go after it. And I think at the very least, they're going to pick up the phone and see if there's any interest there. I've got a few names, and I think these guys are all going to be, once again, guys that are going to get phone calls, and there are definitely going to be names that they're going to circle. I think Dan Lanning in Oregon is definitely going to be a guy that they're going to circle. Mike Elko, the Duke head coach, I've mentioned him a couple times earlier in the year, and I've talked about what a great job he's done at Duke. And I said, when one of these big programs opens up, he's going to be a guy to watch. Kalen DeBoer at Washington, what a great job he's done at that program. I'll talk about them in a minute. I think he's going to definitely get a call. Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. I mean, talk about a program that's had really limited success, really limited resources, and they're one of those teams that got left behind in conference realignment. So they don't have a home right now. They don't have a conference to play in right now going into next year. So now you've got a really unstable situation and a really good coach. That would be a name that would be really interesting. I think you could pry him away from his alma mater. Mike Norvell, I think, is the guy that if I had to pick a guy that I think is going to be the next coach, I think it's going to be Mike Norvell. I think that's a name to circle here. He's done a great job at Florida State. He's really turned that program around. That's just a guy that I think they could go after. And I don't think Florida State has the pockets. Well, I know they don't. They don't have the pockets to match the kind of offer that Texas A&M would be willing to throw at him to lure him away. So watch out for that. Here's my wild card. How about Deion Sanders? I know he's only been at Colorado 1 year, and they've had some limited success, but what a turnaround because we have to remember just how bad that program was. They were terrible, and they had been terrible for years. He has quickly given that team some juice. He's brought in a ton of talent, and they've been competitive. They haven't had a ton of wins, but they've been pretty much competitive outside of a couple games pretty much every week. So I think he's a guy that's quickly rising. Kind of a wild card pick, but I think it's a name to watch out for as well. Michigan, Penn State, game of the week, no Harbaugh, no problem, because this team just continues to roll. Alex, this team's a throwback. This team reminds me of when I was a kid. This team is an 80s, 90s style football team. They are smash mouth. They run it down your throat. They play great defense. This team just blocks and tackles as well as any team in college football. No disrespect to Georgia, but this team is so sound. They ran it 32 times consecutive. They had 32 rushing plays consecutive versus Penn State at one point. And quite frankly, Alex, I think because of it, they were making a statement. They were telling everybody, including Penn State and anybody else that was watching, that look, we are bigger, tougher than you are, and we don't even need our quarterback to beat you. That's how good we are in the trenches. This score was close at times, but it never felt like a second. Watching this game, it just never felt like for 1 second that Penn State could beat these guys. Impressive win. And this Harbaugh suspension, I don't want to jump into all of it. It's stupid. This is so stupid by the NCAA. And I think, if anything, all it's doing is motivating this team even more. They have a real shot to win the whole thing. Alex, Georgia flexed versus number 9 Ole Miss, 52-17. This team is getting better every single week, especially the offense. The offense is really clicking. They had over 600 yards of total offense in this game. This team wins where it matters most, and that's in the trenches. They get Brock Bowers back. They're going to be almost unstoppable. We could be looking at a three-peat here, Alex. Not sure it's great for the sport. I'll be honest. I'm not sure, like, from a national narrative, that them winning again is really good for things. But, you know, the TV ratings for college football this year have been so high. And I think a big reason why is because there's been so many good teams across the nation this year. But here's Georgia once again peaking at the right time. They are going to be scary. They are rolling down the stretch here. Washington Huskies win again. They control their own destiny. And look, since hiring Kalen DeBoer, who I mentioned, I think he's the guy to circle here for this Texas A&M job, the Huskies have gone 21-2, and they currently own the nation's second longest winning streak at 17 games. This is a team that, like I said, they just keep winning. They're going to be in that college football playoff. They're playing such good football, such a fun team to watch. Michael Penix, these wide receivers, you've got NFL talent all over the place. Just a really tough team right now. It's going to be really interesting because they've got some tough games still down the stretch, but it's going to be interesting to see how they finish here. Tennessee, man, it's starting to look like Tennessee. And last year and all the success they had, you know, they were back, so to speak. I think it might have just been a flash in the pan because this program, to me, looks like they were way overhyped this year. They got smoked 36-7 by Missouri. The Tigers, on the other hand, they're having a really great season, but this just wasn't even close. Big-time win by Missouri in a great season that they're having. A lot of people didn't see coming. Alabama just keeps rolling. And similar to Georgia, they're playing their best football at the right time. And I think right now it looks like they're on a collision course with Georgia. That's going to be a fun matchup. What a job Jed Fish has done at Arizona. They win again over Colorado in a great game that nobody saw because it was on a channel that nobody gets, the Pac-12 Network. So I know probably only about 4 people saw this game. But here they are, 7-3. This is a program that has always struggled to be competitive. It's a basketball school. They've always had a hard time getting traction in the football program. Great win for them to continue a really nice season. Colorado, man, they've been close in a lot of games, but I knew going into the year here, after that hot start, that this was going to be tough once they got into conference play because this conference is deep this year. I knew it was going to be tough for them. I think year 2 for Deion Sanders in the Big 12, I expect them to make a big jump and get to a bowl game. I still love the trajectory of this program. But yeah, really, really good under the radar game. I got to mention Texas. Texas barely escapes a bad TCU team. I continue to just not be impressed at all with this team. Too talented, way too talented to continue to just squeak by so many mediocre teams. And the last game I want to mention here, Alex, Oregon-USC. This was a game that I was actually able to cover from the press box and on the sideline. What an atmosphere. Man, Autzen Stadium, this game was unbelievably electric atmosphere. Oregon, I think they're in the discussion now for maybe the best one-loss team in the country. They took care of USC at home. Big win. Bo Nix is now the favorite to win the Heisman. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to those odds, but after this win, he actually swings into the favorite. Never thought I'd say those words, but what a turnaround he's had since coming to Oregon. This is a complete football team, Alex. They have firepower. They're built on the offensive and defensive line. They can push teams around. Caleb Williams, wow. I mean, this guy was under constant pressure. That Oregon D-line was getting after him. It seemed like every time they snapped the ball, there was somebody in the backfield. But even in a loss, I left this game even more impressed by this guy. I mean, his ability to feel the rush, escape, make big-time throws, it's just incredible. There was a play in this game where there was three defenders in the backfield. He was, if you would have just paused the tape, if you would have just stopped, pause the tape, you're thinking this guy is dead to rights. There's nobody that could escape this pressure that he had on him. Somehow he's able to elude all three defenders, get outside of the pocket on the run under pressure, and throws an absolute dime 45 yards down the sideline. It was the type of throw that, quite frankly, I don't know if any other quarterback in the country could make. I'm not even sure that many NFL quarterbacks could make that play. It was really that impressive. He had a lot of big-time plays in this game that just really reminds me of why scouts and so many people are so high on this guy. Alex, in the press box, there was 30 NFL scouts at this game. You want to talk about a lot of NFL talent. We know Bo Nix is going to be a guy that's going to get drafted. We know Caleb is in the mix, obviously, for the number one pick. But there's defensive linemen, there's wide receivers, and just so many players on this field. It was a lot of fun to see these guys up close. Like I said, I think Caleb Williams, I think his draft stock actually went up. I know they lost, but I think it actually went up because he was the only reason that they were even competitive at all in this game. I mean, he is just an unreal college quarterback. And I actually wrote an article on this game. If you guys subscribe to the free newsletter on pintglassfootball.com, check out the newsletter section. Subscribe. It's free. You can check it out, read the article. And there's also a lot of other great exclusive content that we only put out on the newsletter. So if you guys haven't already, go to the website, pintglassfootball.com, and check that out.
You know, Brad, I really just have one pushback on the Bo Nix Heisman race. And I just want to mention the name. Jaden Daniels is really out here doing something special. And I think it's very quiet because LSU kind of fell off the map, even though that was my preseason pick. But when you look at Jaden Daniels, what he's doing with his arm, and then when you turn around and look at what he's been doing with his legs as well, is what the NFL is really, truly looking for. And if he's able to put that together and have that same similar projection into the NFL and what he's doing in college, I think we're looking at probably a top 15 pick and a Heisman winner as well. I mean, 3,164 yards, 72%, 30 TDs, 4 interceptions, and then another 918 yards rushing and 8 touchdowns. I think he's going to have something to say, although I understand the winning in terms of what the contribution is. I think he's going to have something to say about that Heisman.
You're absolutely right, Alex, and I'm glad you brought it up because, look, I think Bo Nix is having a great year, and I was only pointing out that he's the Vegas favorite. But with what you just said there, you're not wrong at all because I love what I've seen from Jaden Daniels. And actually, I'm glad you brought it up because he's going to get the helmet sticker for me this week. What he did this week, was nothing short of incredible, and he's having a great year. The winning aspect, the fact that Oregon is in the mix for the college football playoff, we know that those types of narratives kind of help propel this award. But we've also seen Heismans go to guys on 3-loss teams. We've seen guys even win the Heisman on a 4-loss team. So it's not unprecedented to think that Jaden Daniels should be in New York and should be in the discussion for this award. It's a great point by you. But like I said, he's getting my helmet sticker this week. 17 for 26, 372 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He averaged over 14 yards per pass. He also ran for 234 yards and 2 touchdowns. For those of you keeping track at home, that's 606 total yards of offense and 5 touchdowns. And here's the other thing. Nobody has ever thrown for over 300 yards and rushed for over 200 yards in the same game. This was a historic performance. He put on an absolute show versus the Gators. This was not only an absolute no-brainer for the helmet sticker this week, I think it might be the helmet sticker of the year so far, just to see how much he's improved from the player that he was, the young player at Arizona State, to the player that he is now. The growth has been really incredible to watch, and I'm glad you brought it up, Alex. Last week, Alex, you bounced back big with the Dallas Cowboys minus 16 over the Giants. I took the Jets and laid minus 1.5. The lock of the week has been a struggle for me, Alex. I am on a serious cold streak here. I actually bet 3 games last week. I hit 2 of them, but the game I missed was the Jets. And of course, I made it my lock of the week because I felt that strong about that one. But hey, that's the way it goes. Alex, let's get a 2-0 week. I'm determined that we're going to get back on track here. Alex, who is your lock of the week?
Well, that's what you get for going against the Mighty Raiders. But let's see. I'm still going to take a couple of softballs here because this is what you, again, like I said last week, you have to go big when you're trying to get back, when you're trying to put points back up on the board and you're down a lot. I am going to take the Lions at home over the Bears and lay the 9.5 as well.
Yeah, I like it, Alex. And normally I don't like to lay a lot of points in NFL games, but I think that offensive line and that Lions offense, I think are going to be a problem for that Bears front seven. They are going to pound the ball and control this game. And I think the Bears are going to have a really hard time keeping up in that one. So I like that pick a lot. Alex, you're going to hate this pick because I'm going back to the well. And look, I got burned. Maybe I should know better. But I'm taking the Dolphins, and I'm going to lay the 12 points versus the Raiders. When I look at that matchup, this is a little bit different. That Jets offense is so bad. Miami is a team that they beat up bad teams. And look, I'm not saying the Raiders are a bad team, so to speak, but I don't think the Raiders suddenly just got really good. I think this Raiders team, they beat 2 bad New York teams. The line opened at Dolphins minus 9. Now it's all the way up to 12, and it's up to 12 for a reason. When you see line movement like that, it's because the sharps are betting big on Miami to move that line. I've got to follow the money here and take Miami to cover. But guys, do us a favor. Give us a rating. Give us a review, Apple, Spotify, or whatever podcast player you use. We really appreciate it. It helps us out a lot. Hit us up with a 5-star rating and review. But I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.